We're beginning on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing the questions of Anshei Alexandria to Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. So we had 12 questions that they asked, three of which were Divrei Chokhmah. We did two of those already, and now here is the third one of the Divrei Chokhmah, which Rashi called Divrei Halakha. We discussed other options as to what the meaning was. Shnei Mitzorim Shnitavu Korbanotehem Zebezeh. You have two Mitzorim whose Korbanot got mixed up. Karev Korbanot Shalachad Mehem, and one of the two Mitzoraim's Korbanot were already placed on the Mizbeach, Umeit Achad Mehem, and then one of them passes away. Hasheni Matehe Alav, the second individual, what do we do with him? As Rashi points out over here, if they were both alive, it wouldn't be an issue because you have two sets of Korbanot, and even though the Korbanot got mixed up, you can be Makriv the Korbanot for whomever is necessary. Whichever party needs the korban, you'll say that you bring the korban, l'shem mishehu, and therefore you'll solve the problem. If both of them passed away, then there'd be nothing to speak about as well. Whatever korban was brought, the other ones have all the dinim of korban shemetu ba'alav. And therefore, if it's a chatat, it would be the mitah, sham it's nitak the riyah, and an olah can be brought as a nidava. So that would be simple. The problem here is that you have half the korbanot that were brought, and then you have the other party who passed away. So the half that were brought are done, but we don't know for which party they were done. The party that's alive now either has his korbanot brought, or he doesn't have his korbanot brought, and they need to be brought. The problem is that if we tell him, why don't you just bring a new set of korbanot, that could be maybe chulin lazara. Might be possible he's bringing korbanot that are completely unnecessary because his korbanot were the first ones that were brought. On the other hand, we can't tell him, don't bring korbanot because he's a mitzora. And he is restricted from eating kodoshim. He remains bitumat mitzora. He can't enter into the mikdash. There's real issues for him if he doesn't become tahor. So what do we do in that situation? Amar lehem. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chinina responds to them and says, kotev nechasav le'acherim. He gifts all of his possessions to another party. Bebe ani. And then he becomes impoverished. Mevi chatata o haba ala safek. And then he brings a chatat of, which can be brought ala safek. So there are two parshiot of Tarat HaMitzorah and Parshat Mitzorah. There's Parshat HaMitzorah Ashir, and then Parshat Mitzorah Ani. That is, in order to become Tahor, there's a difference between whether you have the means by which to purchase the korbanot, or you don't have the means. If you have the means, then you're bringing three korbanot, all of which are kvasim. You bring a keves le'ola. You bring a kivsa lechatat, and then you bring an asham. So those are the three korbanot that you would bring, all of them being animals. And obviously that would be more expensive because you're paying for three korbanot that are animals. On the other hand, if you are a mitzora ani, you still have to bring the korban asham. So that is equal, or that is the common denominator between the ashir and the ani. On the other hand, when it comes to the olah nechatat, instead of bringing animals, a keves and a kivsa, you bring shtei torim v'shtei b'nei yonah. You bring two birds, and then one will be a chatat, one will be olah. That significantly reduces the price or the cost of tarat mitzorah. Now, that is just from an economic standpoint. The other thing that changes is the fact that your chatat is coming from a bird instead of a behema. And that has a nafkamina. As far as the olah is concerned, the olah doesn't present any problem for us because an olah can be brought on a voluntary basis. And so therefore you can bring the olah, whether he is chayav or not chayav, because you can make a tnai, a condition in the olah and say, if I am chayav, this is my olah. If I'm not chayav, then this olah is a nidava, it's a voluntary offering. The problem is by a chatat, which does not come al tnai, or which cannot be brought on a voluntary basis. So him to bring a korban chatat would be impossible in this situation because the korban chatat can only be brought if you are obligated. If you're not obligated, you can't bring a chatat. So Rabbi Yoshua's suggestion over here is that instead of bringing a korban chatat behema, which cannot be brought al tanai on condition, bring a korban chatat ha'of. Now by chatat ha'of, it's the one korban chatat, one korban of kapara that can be brought al safek. That we've discussed many times throughout Seder Kodoshim, which is that the Chatat Ha'ov, since none of it goes on the Mizbeach, except for the Dam of the Chatat Ha'ov, and the remainder and everything else is eaten by the Kohanim, You can bring a chatat oaf al safek because it's just damim to the mizbeach, and then the oaf will not be eaten by the kohanim because of that safek. So that gives you a little more flexibility within the chatat oaf to bring it even when you may not be obligated, because you can bring a chatat oaf al safek. So that is a suggestion here as a solution, is to switch this mitzora from being a mitzora shir to mitzora ani. By doing so, then the chatat becomes a chatat oaf instead of chatat beima. And when a chatat oaf can be brought ala safek, now you have a solution to your problem. So we've solved the problem of olah. Now we've solved the problem of chatat. The real problem is that you still have the asham. And the asham faces the same issues, which is an asham is brought for kapara. It can only be brought if you're chayab. It cannot be brought on a voluntary basis. And you have to bring an asham. And here, even if you switch from being an ashir to an ani, it doesn't change the fact that you have to bring a korban asham from a behema, and there's no bringing it al safek. So even if you're a mitzora ani, you still need the asham, and that presents a problem. That's what the Gemara says, vayik asham. What about the asham? Amar Shmuel shekarev ashamo. The situation in which the asham was already brought. It means that both individuals, ashamot, were brought. The safek is with regards to the remainder of the korbanot, where the asham was brought for both mitzoraim, and then the olah and the chatat was brought for one of the mitzoraim. And now the only thing left to deal with is this individual. Was that my olah and chatat? Was that his olah and chatat? And now I have to bring an additional one. And he can do that al tanai. He'll bring the olah al tanai. He'll bring the chatat as chatat ov. In order to facilitate his ability to do such, he has to turn himself into an ani. He does that by gifting all of his assets to another party so that he is classified as an ani. Amar Rav Sheshet, Gabar Rabba Kishmuel, Lema Keha Milta. Would Shmuel really say such a thing? Come on. Who is he holding like? Which Tana's position is he following? That is because the determination of an individual being an ani or an ashir has to have some threshold point. When do you decide is someone poor, or when do you decide someone's ashir, to determine which korbanot they bring? That is a machloket tanaim. Ikir Rabbi Yehuda, if he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, damar asham kva'a, that the asham is the determining factor, and came into Kabbalah asham v'ashirut, lo matzi maiti chatat midalut. Over here, since you said according to Shmuel, he already brought the asham, then we've already determined whether he was ashir ani. After that fact, he can't now go and sign away all of his possessions and become an ani and change the korban oath. The asham is the determining threshold for whether you are ani and ashir. Once you bring the asham, that's koveya, whether you're ani and ashir. That's been brought already. Came in the Kabbalah Hashem Be'ashirut, since he's already been determined to be an Ashir, lo matzmeiti chatat bedalut. He can't bring the chatat bedalut, the chatat as a poor person, because he can't change his status. It's not. If a Mishnah in Negaim, Mitzora Shevi Kurban Ani Ve'eshir. If a person who was a Mitzora is trying to become Tahor from being a Mitzora, brought the Kurban Ani, and then he became wealthy. Oh, Ashir, or he was wealthy, Ve'ani. And then he became impoverished. Akol Aleich Achar Chatat. Everything is determined by the chatat, divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol aleich achar asham. Rabbi Yehuda says everything is determined by the asham. Belezer ben Yaakov Omer, kol aleich achar tziporim. Everything is determined by the birds. These aren't the birds that are korbanot. These are the birds that are brought when the beginning of the mitzoraz tahara process. He brings two birds, one of which is shafted into the mayim, and the other one which is set free after being dipped in the water with the dam. So that's the beginning of the process of the Tarat HaMitzora. And that's what is the determining factor. They all, according to Rashi over here, darshan the same pasuk. And we saw that in the Gemara in Kretot, that it says, Asher lo tasig yado b'taharato. When describing the Mitzora Ani, it says that, Asher lo tasig yado, he doesn't have the capacity, the economic capacity to pay for it, b'taharato, in the process of his tahara. So Rabbi Shimon says that the tarato means the thing that is mitkaper, the thing that brings you the kapara, and that is the chatat. Rabbi Yehuda thinks that the tarato is the davar hamachshiro, the thing that facilitates his ability to come back into the machane and eat kodoshim, which is the asham. The Bali HaTosva both here, Kretot, and other places challenge that assumption and say that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the asham is me'akev your kapara, but so is the chatat and the olah. The other korbanot also are me'akev his ability to eat kodashim and enter into the mikdash and remove his tumat mitzorah. So what's unique about the asham? So the Tosfot formulates it as being that the asham is the key korban, because the performance of all the special items to the mitzorah are done with the korban asham. The dam from the asham is placed on the ear, the big toe, and the thumbs of the mitzorah. So that's the major facilitator of his tahara, even though it's not the only facilitator of his tahara. Or the other way to formulate it is that the korban asham is differentiated from the other two korbanot. The korban chatat comes for kapara. The korban olah is a matana. The korban asham is the machshir. And since it's a korban machshir, that is why it is the primary korban that determines the economic status of the mitzvah, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And according to Rabbi Yaakov, it is the davar ha-goreim le-taharato. It is the thing that causes the tahara. It's the thing that begins the process of the tahara. And those are the shnei tziporim. They facilitate the ability of the mitzvah to go down a path of tahara. Because then after that he waits 7 days, and then he has the korbanot that he brings on the 8th day afterwards for the tahara ha-mitzvah. But that process is all started by the shnei tziporim. That's the beginning of the tahara process. And therefore, that is the determining factor as to what his economic standing is. So over here, if you think he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that the asham is the determining factor, and Shmuel just said, well, they already brought the asham, then the suggestion to convert from being an ashir to an ani, and then bring your chatat as a chatat of, it's not going to work, because the asham was already brought, and his economic status was locked in. If that's the case, you can't switch your economic status. Beikar Rabbi Shimon, so you'll say he holds like Rabbi Shimon, that the chatat is koveya. And since he has yet to bring the chatat, he can switch from being an ashir to an ani. Damar chatat kava, because he thinks the chatat is koveya, then apagav de lo karev asham, neite acher. Forget about Shmuel's suggestion that they already brought the asham. Even if he didn't bring the asham, he could bring another one. Dahash mainen lay the Rabbi Shimon, because we know that Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, damar laiti velitnei. You could bring a korban asham and bring it al tanai. So you're in a bind here, because if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, the asham is the determining factor. According to Shmuel, he already brought the asham. There's no ability now to switch from being an ashir to an ani. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says that the determining factor of your economic status is the chatat, and that was yet to be brought, so you can't switch to being an ani, though the solution that you need to bring the asham already is not necessary, according to Rabbi Shimon. Because Rabbi Shimon believes you can bring an asham al tanai, even though it's kapara, and generally we don't allow voluntary offerings. The asham has a unique feature to it that allows you to play with it with a tanai. It's not available by the chatat. That's because the chatat has matanot damim that go on the top of the mizbeach, on the arba karnot on the top of the mizbeach. Whereas the korban asham has a matan dam on the lower half of the mizbeach, below the chutei sikra, shtayim shein arba, which is your standard matan dam for korbanot. And it happens to be that the korban asham and the korban shlamim are almost identical, with the exception of the fact that the korban asham has aspects that are kodshei kodashim, which require that it be done in the north. It also requires that it's a particular animal. An asham either has to be an ayal or a keves. It can't be female, and it can't be any other animal. So if you just limit yourself to what would be ro'oi for an asham, you can switch between an asham and shlamim without really much difference between them. They're the same matnot dam. The animals that are kasher for an asham are also kasherim for a shlamim, and therefore you can create a tznai, which is what we're about to see in the braita that quotes Rabbi Shimon's opinion with regards to this. Natanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon, the macharat. On the next day, here we're speaking about a safek mitzorah. Tosfot just notes that Rashi in different places explains mimacharat in different ways. The clear situation in the braita is talking about a safek mitzorah, but what is the meaning of the macharat? Over here Rashi says the machar litzvilato, the day after he goes to the mikveh, which is on his 7th day, where then he goes on the 8th day to bring his korbanot. Tosfot says in the Gemara in Zvachim, Rashi interprets the macharat biyom shmini litzarato. The macharat doesn't mean literally the next day. It means after he's done the tarat tziporim, the macharat, the day after, meaning 8 days later. meaning the days after they begins the process of Tara on that eighth day, which would have almost the same meaning as over here, which is the Macharat is the eighth day. Or in the Gemara Menachot, Rashi interprets Macharat to be on the 61st day after he begins the Tara process. And there is a reference to a Mitzorah that was also a Nazir that might have been Tameh to Matameh. And over there in the Gemara Menachot, it speaks about the ways in which he can work his way out of that problem by doing his Tiglachat every 30 days and bringing certain Korbanot. And therefore, on the 61st day, he's bringing his Korbanot for a Safek Mitzorah. All of the cases that Raj is speaking about are issues of Safek Mitzorah. He just defines the word Macharat differently in each of those situations. And the Safek Mitzorah, after he's gone to the mikveh, and he wants to bring his Korbanot the next day, then Mevi Hashemo Velogo Imo. He brings the Hasham and the Log Shemen that comes along with it. The Mitzorah needs a Log Shemen to be brought in order to do the matnot on his ears, his big toes, and his thumbs, just like the dam of the Hasham is placed on those areas as well. Umamido b'shar nikanor, he brings it to the eastern gate of the Azara, umatne'alav, and he brings it on condition, bomer, im mitzorahu, if I am a mitzorah, hare Hashamo v'lo goimo, then this is my Hasham, this is my log shemen, and I'm bringing that which is necessary to do the Tarat HaMitzorah. V'im lav, if I'm not a Mitzorah, Hashem zeh yeh shalmei nedava. This should be a voluntary shlamim, and the log shemen will also be a voluntary offering of shemen. And in that way, he will solve his problem of being b'safek with regards to the Korbanot HaMitzorah. He can bring an Hashem ala safek. So in that way, you've solved all the problems. The olah can be brought as a nedava. The chatat, if you bring it as a chatat oath, can be brought al safek, and the asham can be brought al tanai. It'll either be an asham or a shlamim. And now you could have brought all the korbanot. So then why did Shmuel suggest that the only way this works is if they already had brought their ashamot? You wouldn't have to have brought your ashamot if you're holding like Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon says that the asham has the ability to be brought al tanai. But oto asham, that asham ta'un, shchitato bitzafon, as we noted before, that Hashem requires shkita and the tzafon because it is possibly kochei kodashim, and Hashem is kochei kodashim, and shlamim is kochim kalim. Kochei kodashim requires shkita in the north, whereas kochei kalim can be anywhere in the Azaram. But the place where it's kasher for an Hashem is also kasher for shlamim. So if you just limit yourself to the northern side, you'll be fine, because whether it's an Hashem or a shlamim, that will be fine. V'taon matnat beonot. It does require the matanot dam on the thumbs, the big toes, and the ear of the mitzorah, because if it's possibly an asham mitzorah, it will require those matnot dam. Usmicha, and it requires smicha. Unisachim, and also has to have nisachim that are brought. Utnufat chazev shok, and it needs a wave offering of the chazev shok. Nechal zichrei kuna, the yom v'layla. It has to eat it by male kohanim for one day and one night. So we'll go through each of these items, the last of which being the limitation that it be eaten like kochei kodashim. Kochei kodashim can only be eaten by the male kohanim in the Azara for one day and one night, as opposed to a shlamim that can be eaten by anyone throughout the city of Yerushalayim and for 2 days and one night. But because we're not sure if it's an asham or shlamim, we opt to the chumrah side and say that it will have the trappings of an asham. Now, with regards to each of the other items, we discussed already the shchita b'tzafon. The requirement of matnat behonot is interesting because the kabbalat dam of an asham is different than the kabbalat dam of a shlamim. Kabbalat dam of a shlamim is done to a kli, and you capture all the blood in the kli, and then you do shtayim shein arba, the matnot on the bottom part of the mizbeach, where you do it on the two corners diagonally opposite each other. That make it that when you splash two matnot dam, it turns it to be four because it lands bidirectionally on the corner of the mizbeach. That's the way you do it for a shlamim. By an asham, you have actually two kohanim doing the kabbalat dam. You have one doing it bikli, then you have another one who does it into his hand in order to do the matnot dam on the mitzorah himself. And therefore, not all the dam goes into the kli, and you need a second kohen who's capturing it in his hand. So now, if you're going to do the matnot behonot, you're actually collecting the dam and doing kabbalat dam differently than you would do it for a shlamim. So the Bali Tosafot in the end say, Eino Chanami, there is a problem here, but the Tikune Gavra, which is a phrase that the Gemara uses in Menachot and in Zvachim with regards to the ability to facilitate a person's ability to become tahor. That sometimes we have to make small exceptions for tikkunei gabra. And this is one of those. In order for this person to become tahor, mituemat mitzorah, if we don't allow this to happen, he won't become tahor. And therefore we were willing to have this unusual kabbalat adam, even though for shlamim that wouldn't be the normal way to do it, we'll allow it in this case because of a dispensation to allow the mitzorah to become tahor. Smicha presents an interesting problem. Shlamim requires smicha for sure midoraita. The smicha on the Hashem mitzorah is a machloket, whether it's only midorabanan or it's midoraita. If the smicha on the Hashem mitzorah is midoraita, then the word smicha here is unnecessary because you would require smicha both for the shlamim and for the Hashem mitzorah. That means placing the hands on the head of the animal, leaning heavily on him, and saying a vidui. So there, it would be indifferent between the Hashem Mitzorah and the Shlamim. If you believe that the Hashem Mitzorah only requires smicha midrabanan, then the smicha over here is because of the Shlamim side of it, and then you'd have to do it in a careful manner, because the Mitzorah is not allowed to enter into the Azara in order to do the smicha, and therefore he can't lean his whole body on the animal, because then he would be inside the Azara. What he can't do is hakafat yadayim, he can place his hands on the top of the animal's head and do a quasi smicha, and that's what we would tell him to do here in order to complete the smicha for the shlamim. We would tell him to put his hands in and do a subpar smicha, but we don't let you put your whole body or do a full-fledged smicha, because that's only permissible for Hashem Mitzorah midrabanan. And since midoraita you can't enter into the Azara, that smicha midrabanan is only a kafat yadayim. It's just sticking your hands on top of the animal. It's not a full-fledged smicha. Then the word smicha over here is a reference to the shlamim, or the requirement for smicha, at least for the shlamim. You'd have to do it in a modified manner in order to get that smicha done for the shlamim. Once again here, you would say the tikkunei gabra. That's in order to facilitate the ability of this individual to become tahor. Nisachim is brought unnecessarily, the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, because both an Hashem Mitzorah and a Shlamim require Nisachim. So irrespective of whether it's a Shlamim or an Hashem Mitzorah, it would come with Nisachim. It might be saying Nisachim to the exclusion of other Hashemot. This is the only Hashem that requires Nisachim. So maybe it's saying Nisachim here because other Hashemot wouldn't require it, but this does. The Tnufat Chazev Shok is the wave offering that's done for the Matnot Kuna that come off of the Shlamim. From the Shlamim, the Kohanim get the Chazev Shok, and you do a wave offering on those items before they're given to the Kohanim. Now, even though over here, the Kohanim are going to eat the whole thing, and nothing is going to the Baalim because of the Chumrot of the Hashem, nevertheless, you still do the wave offering on the Chazev Shok. In addition, there is another item that you need to do, which is Tnufa Mechaim, an Hashem. Mitzorah requires a live wave offering of the Hashem. That's not mentioned here because the Baita is only mentioning things that are Mishchita Ve'elech, from things that are from Shchita and onward, but they would also require Tnufa Mechaim to at least accomplish the Tzad Mitzorah, or the requirement of Tnufa for the Hashem Mitzorah. So that's how Rabbi Shimon says you can accomplish this. Lo hodu lo chachamim, Rabbi Shimon. Chachamim do not agree with Rabbi Shimon's suggestion because of a fundamental machloket between them, which is mipnei shemevi kodashim debate psul. That is because you are then forcing an earlier problem with the korban. A shlamim can be eaten for 2 days and one night. A korban asham can only be eaten for 1 day and one night. If you then suspend your ability to eat after a day and a night, it's possible that this was a shlamim. And if it was a shlamim, you have another day to eat it, yet you're not allowing them to eat it, and you're bringing it or forcing it to become pasul early. And we don't allow you to do that by kodashim. We don't allow you to cut down the period of time in which you can eat kodashim. That's the reason you can't bring a korban todah on Erev Pesach, because a korban todah has a day and a night to be eaten, and the chametz that is a part of that korban todah would be eaten on Erev Pesach, and then in the night of Pesach itself. And even though you could possibly finish it before the Zman Chametz, we don't allow you to bring it because you are cutting down the time period in which it would be possible to eat the Chametz. So we aren't bringing Kodashim the Beit Psul, whereas Rabbi Shimon believes that you can be maybe Kodashim the Beit Psul. And that fundamental machloket makes a difference as to whether you can have an asham be brought out tonight, that it be possibly a shlamim, because the chumrot that you practice with this asham will cut down the possible time period in which you can consume the shlamim. It also happens to cut down the consumers of the item, whereas the shlamim can be eaten by anyone. This asham can only be eaten by zichrei kuhuna in the azara. So you also limit the consumers of the korban, which might also result in maybe in kodeshin the beit soul. Rashi only mentions the time cut down, but you could see there being a kodeshin the beit soul because of the number of consumers is reduced as well. So the Gemara's answer in the end is Shmuel savalak Rabbi Shimon bechado upolikale bechado. Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon with regards to one of his positions, which is that the chatat is the determining factor for whether you are a mitzora ani or mitzora shir. But he does not hold like him with regards to the other matter, which is that you're allowed to be, maybe, kodashim, the beit psol. He doesn't agree with that position, and therefore he can't bring the asham out tonight. And therefore Shmuel gave the solution to what was the scenario that the Anshi Alexandria was speaking about, the Rabbi Yeshua ben Chinuna gave his answer to, which is that the asham was already brought, therefore it's out of the picture, because according to him, he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon that you can maybe kodashim, the beit psol, he holds like the chachamim. Therefore, the asham has to have been brought already. As far as making himself into an ani, it's still open because the asham is not the determining factor of the chatat, and he has yet to bring the chatat. And so he still has the ability to gift away all his assets, become an ani, and then bring two birds, one for a chatat, one for olah, which will then facilitate his ability to become tahor. And that is why Shmuel explained the question and answer in that manner, following one position of Rabbi Shimon, but not the other position of Rabbi Shimon. Shlosha divrei agada. They asked of him three inyanim of agadata. Katuv echad omer. One pasuk says, in Yechezkel, kilo echpots bemot hamet, which is the pasuk that we quote in Ne'ilah, in Atan noten yad nepushim, that Hashem doesn't want or doesn't desire that an individual die, but rather he was ki'im shuvo midarko ara'ah. He prefers that that individual return from his evil ways rather than die. V'chatuv echad omer. On the other hand, we have another pasuk that says, Ki chafetz Hashem nahamitam, that Hashem wanted to kill them, which is a reference to Chofni and Pinchas, the children of Eli, where it sounds like Hashem wants them to die, wants them to be removed from their position, and therefore he's going to kill them. So how do you reconcile the fact that in one place Hashem says he doesn't desire the death of the individual? No, but here he says he does desire the death of these individuals. Kan bo sim tshuva, kan she'eno sim tshuva. Here is where they did tshuva, here is when they didn't do tshuva. If they do tshuva, then Hashem is loach potz v'mot amet. Hashem's not interested in the death of the individual. He's much more preferentially inclined towards the individual doing tshuva. If he doesn't do tshuva, then Hashem will be chafetz lahamitam. We'll see in a second that there is an alternate piece here, girsa, and therefore this will be in a particular situation, which is affected by slightly by the next Gemara, which is Katuva Charomer. One pasuk says, Ki lo yisa panim, lo yikach shochad. Hashem does not favor any individual. He cannot be bribed. He is executing the din to the letter of the law. And you can't get out of the punishment, reward, or whatever retribution is coming your way because of that which you did. On the other hand, we have in Pirkat Kohanim, Isa Hashem Panav Elecha, that Hashem will be favorably inclined towards you. Now, the Bali et Tosafot point out over here that they don't really see the question over here because the Pasuk does not say Isa Hashem Panecha, that Hashem will favor you, which would be the way that you would phrase it if you thought Hashem was providing favoritism towards a particular individual. It would not be that Isa Hashem Panav, it's not Hashem's face, but the expression would be Isa Hashem Panecha. Hashem will give favoritism towards you, or show favoritism towards you. That is only true when you speak about the face of the individual who's the object of the favoritism. On the other hand, when it says Isa Hashem Panav, it's saying that Kibiyachol, Hashem's face. And there it's what it says. It's just saying Hashem will turn towards you to give you the bracha of shalom. So he'll be favorably inclined to give you the bracha. Doesn't mean that he will be play favorites or show any favoritism towards you. So Tosafot says he's not sure why the Gemara brings this as the proof text, because he says the Pashtuta Pasuk does not read that way. He says, nevertheless, the Gemara assumes that Yisrael Hashem Panav It's not simply that Hashem is favorably inclined, but rather he is showing favoritism, and therefore you have a steer on the psukim. Although the Baal Tosafot will point out that there are other psukim that you could have brought, including the pasuk by Lot, where Lot makes a request to save the city of Tzoar, and Hashem agrees, even though it shouldn't have been such, Mikava Din or Mikava Mishpat, it would not be that way. Nevertheless, Hashem acquiesces to his request and says, Hidei nasati panecha gam ladavar hazeh. So that would be a place where it says panecha, referring to the panim of Lot, and that would be showing favoritism or doing something that is not like the letter of the law, not kishruat din. And also by Eov, it says, Vayisa Hashem pnei Eov, that Hashem acquiesces to the request of Eov not to punish his friends who comforted him or said things that were inappropriate. And Hashem acquiesces and shows favoritism towards Eov in acquiescing to his request that his friends not be punished, even though they deserve to be punished. So that's what it says. You do have other examples of it. So maybe the Gemara just brought this because it has broader appeal and it's easier to see it applies to everyone. And therefore, how do we reconcile between these two things? The Gemara says, Kan kodem gzardin, kan achar gzardin. Depends when. If it's before the gzardin, then Hashem does show favoritism. He does go lifnei mishurat hadin to protect the Jews. Kan achar gzardin, here it's after the gzardin. Once the punishment's already been decreed, Hashem shows no favoritism anymore. It will be carried out to the letter of law, whether or not you are Jewish or non-Jewish. Now, the Baalei Tosafot point out that the Gemara in Brachot and in Rosh Hashanah brings alternate answers to these questions. So first of all, he says, with regards to Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, the Gemara in Brachot has a different answer to this. The Malachi Asherit asks Kadosh Baruch Hu, how is it that you favor Klal Yisrael? If you say that you're not going to favor anyone, Hashem responds to them, how could I not favor Klal Yisrael? Because I, in the Torah, say, v'achalta v'savata uveirachta, that the requirement for benching is only when you're satisfied. V'hemidaktakim ad kebetzo ad kezayit. They over there go lifnei mishurat hadin and bench even when they only eat a kezayit or only when they eat a kebetzo. It's a machloket there, how much you need to eat in order to be chayav in benching. But they don't wait until sviyah to bench. So they do lifnei mishurat hadin. So mida k'neged mida, I should also act with them lifnei mishurat hadin. So there it makes it sound like there is distinction and there is favoritism, and Hashem is fine with that. He doesn't answer that one way like this, one way like that. Simply says, yes, I do favor B'nai Yisrael. Why doesn't he answer like we answer here, or vice versa? Why doesn't the Gemara here answer like it did in the Gemara in Brachot? So Tosafot says in the end, V'yesh lomar deloam shinuya dehacha ikar. The answer given by our Gemara is the primary answer. V'kra damar lo yisa panim. And the pasuk that says, I will not show any favoritism, is Mayri Ben Bisrael Ben Be'obdei Kochavim. That's referring to Jews and non-Jews. Be'obdei Kochavim Afilu Kodem Gzardin. Be'obdei Kochavim. That is true, whether it's before the decree or after the decree. It will always be Kava Mishpat. It will always be a case that it's not Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. For Israel, it will make a difference. Achar Gzardin, then the pasuk will apply to him that there is no favoritism. But Nei Gzardin, then he will go Lifnei Mishurat Hadin and be Noseh Panim to Bnei Israel because it is Lifnei HaGzardin. That's the question that's asked in Brachot, which is, before the Gzardin, why do you favor Israel over the Obdei Kochavim? And the answer is, because Bnei Israel do the same. It's a quid pro quo. They act Lifnei Mishurat Hadin with regards to what they are obligated to do for me. So therefore I act towards them Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. But all of that is Kodem Gzardin. Our Gemara then says, after Gzardin, it makes no difference whether you're Jewish, non-Jewish. There is no favoritism that should anymore. There is no Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. So that's how Tosafot reconciles those two. With regards to the previous question about the mate, whether Hashem wants the person to die or not, here the Gemara answers that it has to do with whether he did tshuva or he didn't do tshuva. On the other hand, Tosafot quotes from the Sifrei that the answer to the question was, Kan Kodem Gzardin? Kan Leachar Gzardin? Number two is he brings from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says that, Gdola Tshuva Shemikaret Gzardin Oshel Adam. Tshuva is so great that it can undermine, it can tear up the decree of an individual. So it sounds like Tshuva works even post the decree. Then the Gemara there asks, it sounds like tshuva only works before the Gezar Din. And the Gemara answers, Lokasha, Habayochid Abitzibor. If you're an individual, once the Gezar Din comes, very hard or almost impossible to unwind the Gezar Din with tshuva. Then by the Tzibor, Tzibor has the ability to unwind the Gezar Din both before the Gezar Din and even after the Gezar Din. And that answer also could be used for the previous Gemara about Nisiyat Panim, which is the fact that if it is Biyachid, there is no Nisiyat Panim. Whereas if it is the Tzibor or Klal Yisrael, there is Nisiyat Panim. And that also could be an answer to the question as to what the difference is, as to why that one pasuk says Hashem shows no favoritism, and the other pasuk that says Hashem does show favoritism. So Tosfot then says, Alma b'yachid ain't tshuva mekaret gezar din shel adam. By individuals, tshuva doesn't help. Ubishmatin, our Gemara here makes it sound like that tshuva works even for the yachid, even after gezar din. Because Hashem is saying that he wants to kill them. Kill them means that he already has a gezar din, he has a decree about what's going to happen to them. And here it's saying, Achar gezar din, if you do tshuva, it works. That's the pasuk in Yechezkel. And the pasuk that says that Hashem wants to kill them is post gezar din, where they didn't do tshuva. Because if it is before gezar din, then it's of course Hashem would accept the tshuva. So how do I reconcile this Gemara with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah? So Tosfot says, it must be that our Gemara is following a different opinion than that which is found in the Gemara of Rosh Hashanah. Yishamar the sugi the shmaitin to Rabbi Yitzchak. That follows Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion that says, Yafetz akal adam ben konim the gzar din, ben achar gzar din. Doesn't matter whether it's before or after the decree, tshuva helps. And therefore our Gemara is following that position of Rabbi Yitzchak, that it helps before and after the gzar din. Before the gzar din, of course it helps. After the gzar din, then you have the distinction, the psukim we have here. If you do tshuva, you can unwind the decree. If you don't do tshuva, then the decree will remain in place and Hashem will be chafetz lahamitam. He will desire to kill them because they're not doing tshuva, they're not changing their ways. Ketuv achad omer ki bechar Hashem b'tzion, that Hashem chose Tzion, Yerushalayim, as his abode, as the chosen location, that which he favored. Ketuv achad omer, but the pasuk in Yirmiyahu by the Churban says, ki alapi val chamati haitali ha'ir hazot min hayom asher banu ota ve'ad hayom hazeh, that my anger and my wrath was on this city from the day it was created until today. And therefore I'm going to destroy this city because of all that bad that has accumulated from that moment of time. So how do you reconcile the fact that there was a chosen place? And yet Hashem is saying here that from the outset, he despised this location of Yerushalayim because of the bad that was embedded in it. My answer is, Kan kodem shenasa Shlomo et bat paro. The fact that Yerushalayim was the chosen place and Hashem was favorably inclined to that was prior to Shlomo Melech marrying bat paro. Kan achar shenasa Shlomo et bat paro. And the pasuk that says that Hashem was from the outset disapproving of that which was taking place in Yerushalayim, that is when Shlomo HaMelech married Bat Paro. And as we know, many of the Midrashim that surround that marriage, including the fact that the marriage took place on the eve of the Chanukah Ta-Mikdash. And over there, the Midrashim say that on that moment when Shlomo married Bat Paro, the island of Romi was planted in the sea, or in essence, the destruction of the Bayit that was founded at that point in time was already embedded in this act of Shlomo HaMelech, which was very problematic, that he had married Bat Paro, had created an alliance with the Egyptians, and in a sense married a foreign woman who has significant influence over that which takes place in the Jewish empire. And she, in the end, helps to introduce Avodah Zarah and causes problems, as we see in the Navi later on in Shlomo's life. And therefore, the seeds of destruction were planted at that moment, which is borne out by that Midrash that says that Rome was created on that day that the Beit HaMikdash was founded, or in essence, the destruction was already foretold, even though, of course, one is about Beit Sheni and one is about Beit Rishon. All right, now the Gemara continues. Shlosha Divrei Burot, as Rashi calls them, Divrei Shtut. That's the way that Rashi claims them. The Marsha says that Shlosha Divrei Burot means that they were not well-versed enough in Sefer Yetzirah, which is they didn't understand the distinction between a change that is a full change rather than just an external change. And all of their questions derive from the fact that they think that the changes that happened here were all external and not complete. Whereas when Hashem makes a change in Teva, in nature, He makes a complete change, meaning that He's able to recreate, He's able to change the dynamic of any object to whatever He wants and whatever He desires. And that's why it was Divrei Burut. They didn't understand that distinction, which we'll see in the questions that they asked. Ishto shel Lot, the wife of Lot, who turned into a pillar of salt, Mahu shetitameh, is she mitameh kemet? Amar lehem, mate mitameh, emei netziv melach mitameh. A mate is mitameh to matameh. A pillar of salt is not mitameh to matameh. According to Rashi, it was a silly question. He addressed it anyway, because you have to be respectful and you have to give answers to everyone, because if you don't answer them or you poke fun of them, they won't come and ask the questions that are relevant, or they won't ask the questions when they need to. So he answers them anyway, and he says, salt is salt, a corpse is a corpse. And this woman is no longer a corpse, she is a netziv melech, and therefore she's not mitameh. According to the Maharsha, it was a more complicated question, which was, they thought that once she turned into a tziv melech, a pillar of salt, that was her external side was tziv melech, but still internally, she was still an individual or a goof that was there with salt around it, or the salt was a exterior levush, whereas inherently, it was still a human being. And the answer that he gives them is, no, when Hashem changes from a human being to salt, it's through and through. It means not only is the external appearance salt, the mahut of the item is now salt through and through. And that's why he called it Divrei Burut, because they didn't understand that distinction in when Hashem does a Yetzirah or a creation. Ben HaShunamit, Mahu Shehitameh, the son of the Shunamit that Elisha brought back to life after he died, is he mitameh to matameh? Amar lahem, mate mitameh, then chai mitameh. So if someone's dead, is mitameh. Someone who's alive is not mitameh. So since he's alive, then he's not mitameh. Even though, again, interestingly enough, they don't ask about the Ben HaTzarfatit that Eliyahu revives and brings back to life. They only ask it about the Ben HaShunamit that Elisha brought back. I saw a suggestion that that is because the only reason the Ben HaTzarfatit died is because Hashem wanted Eliyahu to return the Mafteach of Geshem to allow there to be rain, because Eliyahu had withheld rain because of the behavior of Bnei Israel, and Hashem's trying to teach him a lesson to understand why he wants to give rain, even though the people aren't doing the right thing, and he does that through the Ben HaTzarfatit. And since the Ben HaTzarfatit doesn't die because he sinned or did anything wrong, it's because of Eliyahu, then he technically may not be mitameh mate. There's only someone who dies because of their sins is mitameh mate. And that's why they don't ask the question from the child that Eliyahu revives, only from the child that Elisha revives. The last question is, Meitim latid labo, when the dead are resurrected in the future, Tzrichim hazah shlishi v'shvi'i, do they need tahara from their tumat hamet on the third day and the seventh day, meaning the sprinkling of the parah aduma? Or do they not require that? Amar lahen, l'kishiyachyu nechkam lahem. When the resurrection happens, when Tchiyat HaMetim happens, we will discuss the issue. We will try to come to a conclusion as to what needs to happen there. Igadamre, l'kishiyavo Moshe Rabbeinu imahem. One of those individuals that will be resurrected in the future, but Tchiyat HaMetim is Moshe Rabbeinu. And since we'll have Moshe Rabbeinu there, he'll tell us whether they need the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma or not. What's interesting over here is that they do not ask, are they mitameh the mate? Unlike the previous cases, they don't ask if they are mitameh the mate. And similarly, in the case of Ben HaShunamit, they don't ask if he needs tara mituma. That might be because there is a complete distinction here. By the case of Meitim, we know that their body is decomposed. And therefore, when they return Latid Lavo, the body that they're given is definitely a new body. So that's why we know for certain that they are not mitameh mate. The only question is, do they have a din of tumata mate from when they died originally that needs to be cleansed now when they are resurrected? And that's the question they ask. By the Ben HaShunamit, it's the other way around. His body was intact, therefore it's clear to them that he doesn't require hazah shlishi v'shvi'i for tumata mate because he's completely intact. The only question was, is he mitameh mate because he was once dead and now he has been brought back to life? And whether it's a divrei shtut or going to the Maharsha, it's a more complex question, which is that, is it just his outer levush that makes him into a live entity now? Or is he really alive, fully through and through? And that would be the determinations whether you think he might be mitameit to matameit, or whether he is tahor legamrei. Right? Shlosha divrei derech eretz. They also asked him three issues of proper behavior, etiquette, or basically the way of the world. Ma'ase adam v'yachkam. What should a person do if he wants to become wise? Wise over here means a reference to a talmid chacham. Amalehem yir bebi shiva v'yimait bitzchora. He should spend a lot of time learning, and he should spend little time doing business or working. Amru harbe asukein v'loho yilehem. Many people tried that method, and it didn't work for them. They spent a lot of time learning. They didn't work a lot, and yet they still didn't turn out to be talmidei chachamim. It's an interesting expression, because the similar expression is used in the Gemara in Brachot and Daf Lamed Hey, because the machlok between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel as to what is the better way in life. Is it better to be totally immersed in Torah and to forget Olam Hazeh, like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai? Or Rabbi Shmuel says that people have to live. So you work and you learn. You work and you do mitzvot. That it's a combination of both. And the Gemara there says, Harbe nasu k'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Many people tried that k'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. V'lo alta lehen. And it didn't work out so well for them. So it's a similar language, but ironically it's in the opposite direction. Over there it was people who dedicated themselves totally to Torah didn't work out. Over here it says that people who dedicate themselves in the priority and majority to Torah and did a little business, it didn't work out for them. Eli yivakshu rachamim mimisha chokhma shalom. You have to daven. You have to daven for Hashem, for chokhmah, for the ability to be a Talmid Chacham, to have the right Yirat Hashem. Shenemar, ki Hashem yitein chokhmah mipiv dat utfunah. Hashem is the one who grants chokhmah. From his mouth comes out knowledge and understanding. So you see, you need that, you need to daven. Tani Rabbi Chiya, mashal the melech basar v'dam. It's equivalent to a king, a worldly king, shasa se'udah l'abadav. And he made a great feast for all of his servants. And he sends gifts of food from his seudah to those that he loves, those that he cares for. And similarly, with regards to chokhmah, dat utmunah, Hashem directly gives those gifts to the individuals who are worthy or those that have beseeched him for it. And you see here that the king who sends to those that he loves, to those that he favors, he sends it directly to them. It doesn't go through the intermediary of the Abadim or through a medium. So too, with regards to Chokhmah, the same thing, that Hashem gifts it directly to those that he loves and those that beseech him for that gift. Maika Mashmalan, what is he teaching us, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chinana, over here with his answer? Because if the answer was that you should daven, why didn't he give that answer first? Why did he give the answer of Yirbe Yibishiva, and then only afterwards say that you should daven? So, daha below ha lo sagya. That's what he comes to teach you, that you need both. It doesn't work just to daven to be a Talmid Chacham. It also doesn't work just to sit there and learn and you'll become a Talmid Chacham. You need both. You need both sitting, you need the hishtadlut, you need the investment to become a Talmid Chacham, but you also need the same time or simultaneously to daven and beseech Hashem that she grant you the chokhmah, which is that it is a requirement that you strive to be your best. But in the end, it is a matana me Hashem. So you have to do your part, or you may need to extend yourself as far as you can, and the ability to go further or to go higher will be a matana me Hashem, and that's why you need to daven. And therefore, there is both aspects here, both yeshiva, your baby yeshiva, as well as yivakesh rachamim min hashamayim. My second question was, ma'aseh adam v'itasher, what should a person do in order to be wealthy? Amar lahem. He answers them, yirbe b'schora, v'iseh v'itein be'emuna. So first of all, you can see the aleph of the gra. The gra takes out yirbe b'schora. He thinks it has no bearing how much business you do or how much work you're involved with. That's not the determining factor. The sole determining factor is yiseh v'itein be'emuna, that you act honestly and justly in your business practices. That's the only thing that will determine whether you are able to be wealthy and successful or not. Obviously, the Girsa that we have says, as opposed to the previous statement of the Gemara, if you want to become wise, you want to become a Talmid Chacham, your baby yeshiva, my eighth b'skora, here's the opposite way around. If you want to be successful in business and not necessarily a Talmid Chacham, then your baby yeshiva, spend more time doing business and involved in worldly pursuits, act properly, and then you become wealthy. Amrulo, they once again said to him, Harbe asukeim lo ilu. Many people worked hard, invested a lot of their time in their businesses, acted honestly and justly, and yet it doesn't help. Eli vakesh rachamim mimisha osher shalo. You gotta ask Hashem, you gotta beseech Hashem, you need to daven. Shemar liyah chesef v'liyah zahav. Hashem says, the silver and gold belong to me, and therefore I grant it to whomever I choose. My kamash malan, again, why do you give the first answer if the second answer is the right answer? We give the same answer again, which is daha b'loha lo sagi. You need both. You need both the investment in the business and honesty and integrity in your business. And according to the Gra, just honesty, integrity in your business. But you also need to daven, because in the end, it's siyata dishmaya that makes it work. And two people could do the exact same thing, and one of them will be successful and the other will not. It's all determined by the siyata dishmaya. Interestingly enough, the Sefer Ben Yoyada does not explain itzavi itemi emunah the way that we would normally explain it, which is that you have to be honest and have integrity in your business dealings, because he says that's a given. That's not an optional thing. That's, everybody has to do that no matter what. Rather, he says itzavi itemi emunah. It means ve'emunah b'kodesh baruch hu, that the person relies or understands that the osher is dependent on kodesh baruch hu, and therefore he does all his business dealings assuming that it'll work out if Hashem wants, and it won't work out if Hashem doesn't want. But he realizes that his efforts are only to facilitate the bracha of Hashem, and not because his efforts in of themselves are the producer of the wealth. Now the third question is, Ma'aseh Adam Yilo Banim Zecharim. What can a person do in order to have male children? Amar lahem, Isa Isha Hogenet Lo. He should marry a woman who is appropriate for him. B'kadesh Atzmo B'shat Tashmish. And he should be careful and scrupulous at the time of cohabitation. Rashi says, l'shamesh b'tzniut, to act in a manner that is tzanua. And we also know that the Tavide Rabbeinu Yonah in the Gemara Brachot, which we will shortly see, say that a person at the time of Tashmish also has to daven for the offspring that they will have. The determination of what will be the gifts and that which those children are endowed with is determined at that time, and you need to daven at the time of Tashmish that that be the case. Amru abeya sukeim lo ho'ilu. Many people acted in that proper manner, and yet they didn't have banim zecharim. El yivakesh rachamim misha banim shelo. You should ask from Hashem. Shenemar hinei nachlat Hashem banim zechar pri aboten. That the children are provided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the fruit of the womb are His reward. So you see here that Hashem is the determining factor as to the banim zecharim that a person will have. Because Hashem is the one who specifically grants those banim or banim zecharim as a reward. My kamash malan. Again, why do we need two answers if the real answer is just daven? Da'abaloha, lo sagi. You need both. You need to marry appropriately, act appropriately in your cohabitation, and you need to daven to Hashem, and the combination of both will bring that about. My schar priya boten. Why is it the reward of the offspring? It seems to be a strange statement. Since they hold back, or they tarry themselves internally, in order that his wife will be mazria first, the reward for that behavior is that you have a ben zakhar. This is premised on the Gemara that we saw earlier in the Masechta, where the Gemara said, if the man is mazriat tchila, then it is a female that is born. And if the woman is mazrat tchila, then it is a male that is born. That was premised on this idea that the woman was also mazrat, not just the man. And the Gemara is referencing to that, saying that over here, if the individual is mishaheh, he tarries to allow the woman to be mazriat rishona, then that schar for be tarrying in the priyavotin is the banim zecharim, the male children that are born from that behavior. And that's why the phraseology is schar priya boten. Okay, we're going to stop here at the two dots on the top of ayin aleph, amud aleph.